Good morning. I'm Jim Packard, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about home renovation, repair, water, and inspection issues with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison. Ken, real pleasure to have you back with us.
It's good to be here, and nice to see you behind the command module.
And John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg. John, thanks so much for coming by.
Great to be back,
Always
Jim.
A pleasure to see both of you. There is a nationwide class action lawsuit against CertainTeed Corporation, who made a type of organic asphalt shingle, which, according to the suit, failed prematurely, didn't perform as well as the shingle should have. There have been 190 complaints against CertainTeed filed at Wisconsin Consumer Protection since the year 2000, and you can get more information about the possible settlement and how it affects you at CertainTeedShinglesSettlement.com. And Ken, I'm wondering, have you had experience with a particular kind of CertainTeed shingle that's had this problem?
No, I haven't had any problems with any of the shingles that we've installed in the last several years, but I know that John has some experience with it and knows a little bit more about what the problems are.
CertainTeed is certainly not alone in having shingles that have failed in the past. And the problem is the organic mats. And when you get on roofs where you've got quite a bit of moisture, or you've got acidic environments, such as one I just looked at last week that's underneath a large walnut tree, the mats can tend to fail prematurely. Now, I believe that, it must be 5 years ago or perhaps even a little more, Jim, that CertainTeed moved away from the organic mats. Almost everything is fiberglass mat nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there is a website. I don't know what the address is, but CertainTeed, Elk, GAF, other companies that have had problems with their shingles, my experience has been they've been really good about replacing them.
Mm-hmm. All right. And again, it's CertainTeedShingleSettlement.com, or you can call us toll-free number 888-898-4111. And if you'd like to join the conversation with Ken and John, the number for you is 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Got an email from Dave to start off this morning, helping his brother finish part of his basement in Madison. We feel confident about how to properly handle the foundation walls, but are not sure about insulating the floor. My questions are, what thickness of foam insulation would you use? EPS or XPS, and should there be a vapor barrier over the currently tiled basement slab? There appears to be no moisture issues in the basement. John?
Well, our standard recommendation is to use a 6 mil polyethylene vapor barrier down on the floor. Now, on a newer house, this may already exist because the state code for some time has required this underneath the basement slab. So if this is a newer house, then that is not going to be required above the slab. As far as the rigid insulation, what you want to take a look at is the minimum compressive strength of it. You're going to be probably putting sleepers down, and so you want a minimum compressive strength of 25 pounds per square foot. Otherwise, what you may end up with is a very interesting floor with lots of weaves in it where you have the sleepers sinking down into the foam. So the type of foam doesn't make a great deal of difference. Of course, you can check your foam to see whether it's R5 per inch or 6.3 per inch, but you're certainly not going to want to put down something like white beadboard that does not have good compressive strength.
One additional question from Dave on a separate note. What kind of vapor barrier or retarder should be used on unfaced fiberglass insulation on 2x6 walls? Is 6 mil poly acceptable in Madison's climate?
Yes.
All right. Let's go to the phones to Scott in Onalaska. Hello, Scott. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, hello. I heard you just talking about shingles and insulation. My question is something to do with that. I'm currently tearing off the shingles on my roof and putting a steel roof on it, and I have a vaulted ceiling in the house with only 2x10s. Right now there's a craft face R19 bat laying in there. That's all I have for insulation. I'd like to improve on that. And being I got into this right now because I've taken the roof off, and this would be the time to go into the top. But
you betcha.
I've talked to four local insulation contractors that have been in the business for a long time, and this cavity is accessible from a truss part of my attic, And what they wanted, all four of them, they said what the best solution to this is to dense pack fiberglass from the cavity where it's accessible to, and then fill dense packs all the way to the decking. And they claim they can end up with approximately R38 by doing this. Do you think that's a good idea, or will I have problems with moisture in this area? They're also recommending that I paint the sheetrock ceiling below this area with a paint that will seal, a moisture barrier paint. So what do you think about this idea?
Well, the moisture barrier paint will help. One of the problems that you may have, Scott, you were just talking about shingles, is the temperature of the deck. You have no way of venting hot air out of there because you're not going to have your one-inch airspace. So your shingles may cook and may fail prematurely, and you may find with some manufacturers that you do not have a warranty on those shingles.
Well, I mentioned when I started I'm putting a steel roof on.
It is steel. Okay, well, that is going to help. But if you have any kind of air leaks in that that roof and you get moisture up there, you are going to end up having problems. I guess what I'd probably do, because it really is a difficulty trying to insulate that at a reasonable price, is go ahead and have your house pressure tested, have a blower door test done, and check for air leaks up high. Diffusion, you know, the vapor barrier paint stops diffusion. But if you've got air leaks, say where you've got some can lights or ceiling light boxes or things where that air is getting up into that interstitial space, that is where you're going to have the problems. And a blower door test should help. So you're going to be taking care of diffusion and you're going to be taking care of air movement. So you're going to be taking care of two of the main ways that you're going to get moisture up in there. Ken, anything you want to add to that?
Well, the only thing that I was thinking about is that if you do fill the cavity with, I don't think you would probably use fiberglass. I think you'd probably dense pack cellulose in there. Isn't that what they recommended?
I would think so.
Well, what they're saying is if there ever is any moisture in there, it will destroy the value of the cellulose as far as insulating because it's just shredded paper where fiberglass dense pack in it, they can still get the R value, but if it ever does have any moisture up it there, it won't affect the insulation value of the fiberglass. And one contractor told me they did a house some years ago, and they dense packed the whole roof except for one run. They left the air ventilation space in that one run. Later they came back and checked the heat on that roof, and that one run where it had ventilation was the hottest portion of the roof, and they thought that was because the heat is allowed to get down into this ventilation area and then and heat that up, whereas if there's insulation under it, it's not allowing that to happen. Does this sound reasonable?
A lot of finger pointing.
Well,
yeah, both of us are sort of shaking our heads with a little bit of concern because, first of all, the one issue is if moisture does get in there, I think that the insulation value may be the least of your problems. You've got no place for your moisture to go, first of all. You've got a seal on the bottom because you've got a vapor barrier and you've got steel roof on top. So moisture's got to do something, and it's probably going to sit in the wood and start to rot the wood or create molds and all kinds of little problems. I'm an advocate of keeping the roof, the top of the roof, cool, getting a ventilation underneath the roof above the insulation, if at all possible. Dense pack would work in that situation if you could. You know, one example would be to add sleepers and set the roof off the sleepers and vent it top and bottom, and then you've got air movement below the steel but above the insulation. I would like to see the documentation from manufacturers and other engineering firms before I did what's being recommended to you.
Yeah, Scott, I got to agree with Ken. One other thing you might take a look at is it really would be nice to have a little bit higher R value than you're going to be getting just by filling the interstitial space. Mm-hmm. And one possibility would be to simply to go ahead and do that, but then overlay the roof with the Cornell panels made here in Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah, that's a great idea.
And the Cornell panels, what you have is you've got foam. You can order it in any thickness you want from their company. And then you have a 1-inch airspace. So that would give you the R factor. If you want to get up to R50 or even R60, that would give it to you. Plus, it would give you the space and then put your steel roof over that. That way, you've got some drying capacity. With your system, with the vapor barrier paint and the steel, as Ken said, you have zero drying capacity. And if you ever get moisture in there, the moisture is going to cause either of the forms of insulation to not perform well because the moisture is going to transfer heat. And you could end up with some real interesting fungal or air quality issues. So I'm real concerned. I think you may want to take a look just a little bit further on that.
And good luck to you, Scott. Thanks very much for the call. And Randy's up next in Green Bay. Hello, Randy.
Hello. I just want to say, first of all, I've learned so much from your show. I seldom call in because my questions are answered. But I do have a quick question for you today. On this, I have a standard gable-type roof, and on the south end of the house, which is the gable end, it's shaded, and therefore I have about 4 or 5 feet along the edge of the roof, a mold and mildew growing, and I'm concerned that it's kind of pulling the granules off the fiberglass base of the shingles. Do you have any suggestions what I should do about that?
Sure. We can put a little bit of zinc up there, put a zinc strip. Remember these old farmhouses that had the wooden shingle roofs, and they had this strip of metal across the top? Well, that was a piece of zinc. And what happened is, you know, a little bit of acidity in the rain would take the zinc off. It would come down, and it would work as a sort of as a fungicide, mildewicide. In fact, you'll find a lot of your better shingles today now actually have zinc granules in the shingles for if you're putting them on in a shady area or the north side of the house. And you can buy little zinc strips that are meant to be placed right at the edge of the shingles on the roof, and that will take care of the little things that want to grow up there.
Okay, so it just goes along the ridge?
You can put it along the ridge, or you can actually slip them in right where the shingles overlap.
Okay, and that's something specifically made for that?
Yes, I think if you Google, what would they Google on that, Ken?
Gee, where are you located, Randy? Green Bay?
Green Bay.
Probably the simplest thing to do would be to check with a roofing supplier locally. Yeah. And just give them a call and tell them what you want, and they'll should be able to point you in the right direction. I'm not sure who to Google.
Yeah, I'll bet ABC is such a big company, probably has a distribution site there, Randy. Why don't you give ABC a call, and I'll bet they can set you up.
Another thing is make sure that, maybe you're doing this already, but make sure you've got your trees trimmed away from the roof, because I've seen tree branches rub against a roof and destroy a roof very quickly.
Oh, yeah. No, they're far enough away that way. But
all right. Good luck to you, Randy. Thanks very much for the call. The number is 1-800-642-1234 as we talk with Ken Adams and John Freiberger here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk about home renovation, repair, water, and inspection issues today with Ken Adams and John Freiberger. And let's go back to the phones to Matt in Liberty Pole next. Hello, Matt.
Hi. We live in about a 100-year-old farmhouse, and our bedroom does not have basement underneath of it, and there's no crawl space to make it accessible, and the floor is very, very cold. The bedroom is actually about an inch lower than the other floor, and I was thinking of trying to make it a little warmer. Would it be worth it to put sleepers in and get about an inch, or it'd actually be about a half inch if you put the plywood on top of foam underneath the floor, or would that be not worth the effort, or is there any other ways I could warm up this floor?
What's underneath your floor?
I don't know, to be honest with you. There's no crawl space that's accessible from the basement. It's all closed off, and I'm guessing it's just footer with joists laid up on it and just airspace.
Well, go ahead, Jim.
One of the issues we have, Matt, a lot of old houses had very low crawl spaces under parts of the house, and they were usually vented. In fact, sometimes you'll see the old iron vents in the wall. Mm-hmm. And the idea of the iron vents was to get the humidity out. Now, if this crawl space is completely sealed, I would have a little bit of concern that we might have some fungal growth and maybe some wood decay going on down there. You're going to be doing something with the floor anyway, so let's cut a hole in that floor.
Yeah, you'd need to visually inspect it.
Right. Let's get down and see what's going on down there. And that may give you the opportunity to get some perimeter insulation around the walls. It's probably old stone walls, but you may be able to get a spray urethane foam on that. If the floor is just dirt and there's a lot of humidity coming up, it gives you a chance to put some 6 mil poly over the floor. And you might even have the possibility of insulating the floor, though perimeter insulation is a lot better than floor insulation, because the heat from your house that's driving down through that floor is helping to keep that wood dry right now. And sometimes if we insulate floors, what we find is then we start getting fungal growth. So do a little bit of what we call deconstructive testing, Matt, before you come up with your plan.
Yeah, if you don't want to make a big hole, you could rent a small one of these little cameras on a flexible arm. They're about as thick as your finger. Drill a tiny hole and poke that around. And sometimes that'll give you enough information.
Well, the venting, if we do put vents in, should go in. I mean, the other problem is that we have a porch all the way around the outside of the house. There's no way to vent outside. Would venting into the basement alone be enough to keep moisture down?
Yes, it would. And all you would need is a 1 square foot vent into the basement. If you're, let's say you're building this house today, that's all you would really need. It gives you enough airflow. But if you do have a dirt floor, it's really a good idea to get that floor covered with some 6 mil poly, and you're looking at a roll of 6 mil poly for $20. So it's pretty cheap.
Okay, because we do have radon issues here too.
Oh, okay. Well, 6 mil poly is going to be a real good investment as far as your air quality then, Matt.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate hearing from you. Fran is up next in Delafield. Hello, Fran.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a flat roof area over my kitchen, not very large, maybe, I don't know, 40 feet by 30 feet, and I'm going to replace it with a rubber roof. So any suggestions you can give me? Some of my questions are, I understand there are several types of rubber roofing. One of the people I've talked to is trying to convince me I should put on a white rubber roof, which is more expensive, but will somehow be, because of it being white, would be a good investment. And I also have questions about putting insulation under that rubber roof, since that kitchen area is quite cold.
Mm-hmm. Well, these are all good questions. One thing, do you use that rubber roof, the deck above that, for anything? Is there a door that goes out to it? Is there a patio up there?
It's just over the kitchen. It doesn't extend over a patio area.
Okay. All right. Well, and you don't have any idea how thick that roof is, how many inches the roof structure is.
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, what you could do when you have your roofer replace the roof, first of all, is they could go from the top and insulate that area, the cavities of the roof, before they re-roof it. So they could tear off the roof, insulate from the top, and then re-roof it. We've done that before quite successfully. We've used one option would be a two-part polyurethane foam. If it's a very small amount of area, I think 2x6s would get you about an R35 or thereabouts, and you could fill that cavity up. That's not quite enough, so maybe what you'd want to do afterwards is put on these panels that John talked about a little bit earlier that has a combination of foam, an air gap, and then sheathing that's insulated over the top of that. I'm not sure that needs to really be vented, though, if you get that kind of insulation in there. John, do you think we could just put foam on and then sheathe over the top of that?
I think since the foam acts as a vapor barrier and as an air barrier, that gives you really good protection. I think your comment on the Cornell panels, that would be best practice.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
mm-hmm.
always a difference between adequate and best. And considering that a good roof now can last almost 30 years, if one can afford best practice is the way to go.
And then with regard to the white versus black, I don't know what the cost difference is for you. Is it are you worried more about solar gain, or are you worried more about heat loss? I think you probably would be just fine in the northern half of the country with a black roof. Save your money there and put it into insulation.
Right.
And just make sure the job's done correctly. With the roof, with the rubber, a lot of people refer to it as EPDM rubber. And with a rubber roof, there's a couple different thicknesses. We commonly see 40 mil and 60 mil, and we like to put on the thicker stuff because it lasts longer. It's marginally more expensive, but you'll get, you know, potentially several more years out of good use out of it, and it's less likely to be damaged if a small tree branch falls on it or something.
What about thermoset membranes versus thermoplastic membranes?
That's out of my field of understanding. Do you know much about those?
Well, we've used various types of vinyls, some that are heat sealed, some that are glued down, and I think the thing you want to look at, Fran, is the history of the contractor who's putting it on, check your references, and then take a look at the warranty on the materials itself. And you're going to want to get a good, long warranty on flat roof. Anything less than 10 years is simply completely unacceptable. But do some questioning as far as the life, because this is going to be a fairly expensive endeavor by the time you add your insulation into it. Mm-hmm. And go with a really good contractor. One can get to fairly sophisticated systems, and one can go to simple systems. And just you're going to have to talk to probably 3 or 4 or even 5 roofing contractors and see which one has the best advice.
All right, Fran, good luck to you. Thanks very much for your call. There's a line open for you at 1-800-642-1234. We got an email from Becky, who said, we have a hole in our poured cement basement wall from bringing in water lines from our outdoor boiler. What is the best way to seal this hole to keep the water out?
From the exterior.
Yeah, that's right. If you can get to the outside of the water lines, that's the best place to plug it up.
The sealants work very well when you're pushing, the water pressure is pushing against the sealants. When you're sealing from the inside, it really gets to be quite difficult.
And if they're water pipes, there's several different like polyurethane type sealers. You want something that's flexible, that's not going to lock the pipe into position and not be able to move with while the pipe expands and contracts. There are any other types of sealants you recommend?
I don't think so, Ken.
Yeah, that's probably
it. we'll hope, Becky, they haven't filled in the hole yet.
And the second question is, the asphalt shingles on our garage workshop are failing. We're thinking about taking off the shingles, applying a layer of ice block, and covering that with metal roofing attached with rubber washers and screws. Is this a good idea?
When you're using the rubber washers and screws, those rubber washers have a limited life. They do turn brittle in the sunlight, and mm-hmm. so you do get some minor leaks. So putting the ice and water shield down above the garage is a good idea. Now, your workshop, I think you said, you would never do that over a house because of humidity problems and condensation, but you're not living out there and you're not producing that much humidity. So that sounds like a real wise way of doing it. So you're using a fairly inexpensive metal roof. But your real water barrier is going to be your ice and water shield. Your roof, in that case, is a rain screen, and that should give you a nice long-life system.
All right, good enough. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Roger in Fitchburg is up next. Hello, Roger. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I have a house that's 30 years old and no leaks of concern that I know of. Someone has suggested a more automatic humidity control unit that would cost about $800 or more, and I'm wondering if that's necessary. We see older houses, 150-year-old houses around that look good to me from the outside. Are there terrible things happening inside if they don't have fancy automatic humidity control systems?
Roger, one of those 150-year-old houses in Fitchburg is mine, and I have no humidity problems because my house leaks like a sieve. Now, your house in the 1980s is probably much better built as far as air movement. There are a lot fewer holes in your house than are in mine. Do you know what your humidity tends to be in the winter inside your house?
Oh, well, in this room now, I think it's 70% or so. It's
ooh. Very- Okay, we really don't want that kind of...
You mean right now?
I think so.
Or what about in the winter? The winter? Yeah.
Oh, well, it gets down to, I think, 20 or 30%.
Oh, well, that's certainly very good for the winter. Roger, I think at this point, just get a humidistat, put it on your wall, and just make sure it doesn't go up above 40 in the winter. And if it does, yes, then go ahead and... go to get an Energy Star dehumidifier and
Energy Star.
Yeah, your price your price sounds about right for a good humidifier, one where you can actually get a little bit of rebate on it. But if you don't need it, you don't need it. It could be that maybe your house is leaky enough that, or you don't produce enough water vapor that you really don't need dehumidification. If we don't want to use the electricity, we shouldn't.
Yeah, well, are the these automatic ones better than, do they generally have better effects than one that a person has to keep an eye on himself going and checking the...
Well, almost all of the decent ones that you can get the rebates on are going to have, basically, you can dial it in. You just punch into the dehumidifier the humidity level you want, and it'll turn itself on and off. And that's pretty much a standard feature at this point with pretty good accuracy.
All right, Roger, good luck to you. Thanks very much for your call. As we talk today with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg, and we go next to Larry in Madison. Hi, Larry.
Thank you. I need to have work done on my brick chimney. The chimney comes up through the roof. There is no shade on this roof. The roofing is 40-year-old, it's 40-year dimensional shingles installed 7 years ago. My question is, can the contractor damage the roofing by walking on it in hot weather? And if so, is there an ambient temperature, an outdoor temperature, above which they should not go onto the roof?
Well, that's a very good question, and I've seen roofs being damaged by contractors crawling around up there in very hot weather. Actually, if the sun is beating down hard on the roof and it's 85 degrees outside, it could be, depending on the color of the roof, it could be over 100 degrees or more on top of the roof. The issue is, how solid the roof is, how old it is, and how much movement there's going to be up there. I would tend to recommend, well, how steep is it, first of all? Is it a very steep roof?
No, it's not very steep.
Okay. If it's possible, a lot of masons will lay down some protective cover on very shallow pitched roofs, like a sheet of plywood in the area they're working on, and work around that so that any damage, if they drop a brick or if they're walking around, they're actually, they've got a protection against the roof. So talk to your mason about it, and most of these guys that work on chimneys have been doing it long enough and have made the mistakes over the years, so they're pretty knowledgeable. Just pick their brains, find out what their plans are to protect your roof, and if it doesn't sound like it's enough for your satisfaction, talk to a couple other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate that. One more thing he recommends is sealing. He's going to seal the crown, but he also recommends sealing the chimney, that is the bricks, with a water repellent. Does sealing it with the water repellent make sense to you?
Generally, no. What you want to do is you simply want to use a good brick, Larry. You want to use a brick whose permeability is relatively low. It's got to be below 0.6. As long as the brick has low permeability, you don't need to put a sealant on. The problem with bricks is if they take in any kind of water, and they will, because you'll seal it, and then what will happen is you get a mortar crack. The moisture will get in there, and it can't get out. So yeah. You want a brick to be able to breathe. We really stopped making bad bricks about 30 years ago.
Well, I have the bad bricks. Locally, they're called Chicago bricks.
Oh, sure, Chicago Commons. Soft clay brick. But you're going to probably replace that with something else, with a modern brick, unless you've got a historic house where you have to go back using the Chicago Commons.
Well, the plan is to get by without rebuilding the chimney if they seal the crown and can keep that brick from absorbing a lot of moisture, then we could avoid rebuilding it and save quite a large expense.
Well, that's a good point. And then if you are going to put a cap on, what you may want to do is put an oversized cap on, because the drier you keep those Chicago Commons, which have a perm rating up around 1, because it's a lightly fired clay brick, that is going to protect them. Now, they are up where driving rain is going to hit them. My chimney is made of exactly the same brick as yours, and every now and then you are going to have to do some repairs. But it is a nice old brick. It expands and contracts with the moisture. The other thing to remember with that brick, Larry, is when you point it, you cannot use a hard mortar. You have to use a mortar where I would say at least 50% of the bonding is in lime.
I've got a very good contractor, good reputation, but you mentioned a cap. They're not talking about putting a larger cap on it. They're just talking about sealing the cap.
Do you have an existing poured concrete cap?
Yes, it is. It's rounded. It's, you know, moisture runs off it pretty well, mm-hmm. but it's got cracks. And so they're proposing just put a sealer on top of the present crown, and then, as I said, waterproof the bricks.
Well, I still would not waterproof the bricks, especially those bricks, which I know very, very well. Yeah, I guess we don't want to replace the cap if it really is quite salvageable. But I think you're probably going to expect in 5 years you're going to have the masons back to do a little bit of additional work.
You know, those caps are not that expensive. They're usually prefabricated. You might just ask your contractor what the cost difference was. Maybe they could replace it with something that's got a little bit larger overhang and a little more protective.
Okay.
All right, Larry. Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate hearing from you. We had an email from Lily in Platteville who said their new home is located on a very windy ridge. A couple of shingles have blown off, and when I looked at them, the cellophane strip at the bottom of the shingles had not been removed. The shingles had been nailed at the top. The question, when installing new shingles, is it standard procedure to remove the thin cellophane strip from the tar on the bottom of the shingle to help the shingles seal?
Oh, Lily, that's a great question, because when I first started roofing, there was a guy that was working on a project down the street from me, and he removed every one of those cellophane strips. They're about an inch long, the length of the shingle, or inch wide, the length of the shingle, and they were all over the neighborhood. It's completely unnecessary to take those off. The only reason they're on there is to keep the shingles from sticking together. These shingles are called, we call them seal-o-matics. And what that means is that there's a little bead of tar on the bottom of each shingle. And when you lay the shingles on top, as you lay them out like a brick, the sun hits them, this tar melts a little bit and seals the top shingle to the one below. The cellophane is just there for shipping.
All right, so there's your answer, Lily. Also wondered if it's standard procedure to install a ridge vent on an unheated garage instead of installing shingles over the ridge.
Oh, you mean? I wonder if she's talking about an aluminum ridge cap rather than just a shingled cover. It's okay to vent the garage. If you have a good quality ventilation system, it's okay to vent the garage because it's going to keep it from getting really hot mm-hmm. in the summer, and it'll let air move around it. I'm not a big fan of the metal. If it's what I'm thinking of, the little aluminum caps with the they've got little turned up sides on either end. I'm not a big fan of them because they dent easily in there. They tend to leak over time. There are other ways to do it, like CoreVent, I think, is a one product, and you put that on the roof. It's like very thick plastic steel wool, and you shingle right over it, and it allows air to move. So you might want to try something like that.
All right, Lily, good luck to you. Let's go next to Lynn in Burlington. And Lynn, what's on your mind today?
We have a roof that we need to replace, and we happen to have like a heat problem in the attic, which is causing like a mold spot in the bedrooms because we're thinking that it's coming through for some reason or another. So we're thought, well, okay, we'll do the white Energy Star shingles, but we can't find them anyplace.
We have mold spots on the ceilings inside the house, Lynn, is that correct?
Right, and they're like 16 on center, and according to Homes on Home, you know, he said that you should make sure that you use a sandable muddied instead of a different kind of caulking type of a thing. And he said that that actually should take care of your mold, that your putties are actually... that they don't have a mold resistance. So that we can handle. But we need to get rid of heat in the attic. So we thought, well, if we put the white shingles on, then it'll reflect.
Well, I think you've two things you need to get rid of, Lynn, which is why venting is part of the Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code, is you need to get rid of heat, but you also need to get rid of humidity. And the way you get rid of both of those is by having high vents in the roof. Usually ridge vents are the best, though you can put in what are called pot vents or turtle vents. And you also need venting down at the soffit. So you really need to have venting. Grab a pencil, Lynn, and I'm going to give you a website I'd like you to go to, because they give you all kinds of nice drawings, and they discuss how attics should be vented, and they even give you wood worksheets you can download for your house.
Oh, good.
And it's called coravent.com, and it's spelled CORA-A-VENT.com. In fact, Ken, I think in the last question just said, gee, Coravent is a good product. It is indeed a good product, but they have really good consumer information there. So the venting, if you do not have adequate venting, any kind of shingle is going to give you a certain amount of heat buildup. White shingles less than dark shingles, but you are not solving the humidity problem. If we have mold spots on the ceiling of the bedrooms, I'm very concerned about humidity. So go to that site, see what you can find, and if you can't find enough information, just call back the next time we're here and we'll offer further help.
Okay, Doug. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Lynn, good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call. And Dave in Menominee Falls is up next. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning. I have two questions. One, I have a 15-year-old home that has been painted, I think, now three times. But the last time it was originally stained, it's cedar siding. And the last time it was painted, we went to latex. So latex over stain. Within probably 2 years, I started noticing mold around on the underside of the overhang areas in the eaves. And was just wondering if there's anything that I can do. It needs to be painted again. It's at that time. And wondering what I can do to prevent this in the future, to stop what's already there and prevent it in the future. And then if I have time, I have a second question also.
Okay. Well, Dave, I think we've got some sort of moisture problem, and we've got some sort of issue that the cedar siding was probably not installed to best practice. It was probably not installed even to industry standards, because I'd say, what, Ken, 90% of the cedar siding is not installed to industry standards?
Yeah, that's about right.
The problem with cedar siding is that often it's put on over foam insulation. There's no air gap in back. It is not pre-finished on the backside, so it has a real tendency to have moisture migrate through it. And when the moisture comes in the back and tries to go out the front when the sun hits it, it blows the stain off, whether it is a latex stain or an oil stain. I think you're probably going to have somebody come and really look at the siding for you. And if we have mildew growing up in the soffits, I'm a little concerned we have a moisture issue. You're in Menominee Falls, so you're going to have several very well-qualified home inspectors there. And you don't have to have them inspect the entire house, but just call the home inspectors, ask them if they have some specific knowledge of how cedar siding should be installed and maintained and moisture problems, and then have a home inspector come in and take a look at it. Go to the website of the National Association of Home Inspectors and also of the American Society of Home Inspectors, and those are people who are probably doing a little bit more than just a common home inspector who is not bothering to join a professional organization. To see how siding really should be installed, is you can go to the Forest Products Laboratory consumer line, and you can download the information on rain screen systems. It's a system that we started putting on houses 30-some years ago, and about 20 years ago, Forest Products Lab decided it really made sense because it allows air movement in back. And we can actually, or not we since I don't do it, but Ken can now put siding on a house that it is guaranteed you will not have to paint it for 15 years as long as it's put on correctly. So there's no, cedar is wonderful stuff. Trees are a renewable resource. It just has to be installed correctly.
Okay, thank you very much. It sounds great. Second quick question is just I wanted your opinion on using these epoxy sealants for basement floors. My brother-in-law did his basement, and where they sprinkle sand, grit of some type later on. But how good a sealant is that in this area? There is radon, and there's small cracks here and there in the basement floor, and I'd like to have that sealed as well as I possibly could. Or if there's something better than epoxy to seal it.
Well, my understanding is that these epoxy coatings are very, very nice for basement floors. They tend to reduce, because they seal everything up, they tend to reduce the amount of radon coming through the floor. And I think the biggest issue you want to be concerned with is if you've got some sort of splash with things like bleach and stuff like that, that can sort of shorten the life. So if you've got your laundry downstairs, you might want to clean up the floor after you, if you splash, you know, bleach and harsh soaps on the floor. But I've seen these last a long, long time.
All right, there's your recommendation. Thank you, Dave, for the call. We've got a couple lines open. If you've got a question, at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Jim Packard. Rachel Owens is our on-air producer today. And you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about home renovation and repair, water and inspection issues today with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison. And your website, Ken?
AdamsDesignConstruction.com.
AdamsDesignConstruction.com. And John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg consults for historic restoration projects. And the website there?
We have none, Jim. We are still in the dark ages. But people with questions can email me at frei@chorus.net.
A little telegraph at your place?
We also accept passenger carrier pigeons. We just read the little messages.
All right. Back to the phones. We go to Sue in Woodstock, Illinois. Hello, Sue.
Hello. Thank you. I have a window well problem. I'm hoping I can describe this well enough. Several years ago, we had our basement finished, so we removed one of the small windows and put a large, regular-sized window for another exit. The window well is about 4 feet deep, and we've noticed over the years the bottom of the window well, where it meets the foundation of the house, has been slowly moving inward. And we're getting concerned now because it's going to start impinging upon the bottom of the window frame. So we don't know. We're going to have to call somebody to come and fix this. But what kinds of repairs would be required in this kind of situation?
What's the material of the window well made out of?
It's like the corrugated metal.
Okay. And it's being pushed in on the edges on either side towards
right.
the
bottom.
Center. Yeah, okay.
Right.
Well, you should have flanges that are you could fasten to the concrete. Do you have those on the outside of those?
I'm not sure if there are any flanges or not.
Okay. Because usually if you fasten those to the foundation, that will help hold it, lock it into place. Is there gravel, several inches of gravel below the, below the opening?
I believe there is. Yes.
So
on the inside of the window well,
some hydraulic pressure and some moving around. You think?
Well, we've got 4 feet of unbalanced fill is going to be pretty good. Sue, do you have a step inside this window well so it meets code for getting out?
There is not a step. There is a small ladder that we put in there.
Okay. You may want to check your uniform dwelling code in Illinois. People are making all kinds of egress window wells now, PVC and fiberglass and all kinds of things. You can basically just order one and put it in the ground, and the taller ones have integral steps in them.
Uh-huh.
You may want to take a look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
if this one does not have flanges that you could pin to the concrete wall, it's going to continue to move on you just because you've got probably 30, 40, maybe even 50 pounds per square foot of pressure against each square foot of that window well. And that's, over time, could indeed cause it to sort of collapse inward on you.
Right. So what you're recommending is that we should probably have it replaced and make sure that they have some flanges attached to the foundation.
Yes, and while you're doing it, make sure that a temporary ladder generally doesn't meet code. So check with your local building inspection department and say, look, if we sell the house sometime, we don't want the home inspector to say that's not really an egress window because I can't get out of the well. So if you're going to put some work and effort and investment into it, let's make sure you've got the right thing and it's really safe and meets the Illinois code for egress.
Okay, thank
you
very much.
All right, Sue, good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call. And let's go to Terry in Green Bay. Hello, Terry.
Yeah, thanks a lot for taking my call. This would be a question for your guests. On a newly constructed garage, about 10 years old, the front of the garage faces north, the back of the garage faces south. The brand of shingles of CertainTeed, the ones facing south are coming all apart, and they were the, you know, they're curling, and they were the better ones. I think they call them shingles. They had like a 30-year warranty. A friend of mine said he heard something about CertainTeed had a big batch of shingles that were bad.
Yeah, the shingle, if you go to the website that, that Jim will give us again in a moment, because I know he has it, you will find that the shingle is one of the lines that has had quite a few problems. So it sounds like you may be eligible for something under this class action suit.
And the website is CertainTeedShingleSettlement.com.
Okay,
CertainTeedShingleSettlement.com.
Okay, very good.
All right. Good luck
Thanks.
To you. Thanks a lot, Terry. Appreciate hearing from you. The number for your call is 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. And Marianne is next in Milwaukee. Hello, Marianne.
Hi. I'm hoping you can spell one of the words that you had used previously when you were referring to flooring that's built without a basement under it, because we have a cottage that's just a few feet away from the shoreline, and it just has the subfloors in, and you had said something about it being $20 a roll or approximately for sectional poly or something. Could you spell that?
were you talking about polyurethane, 6 mil polyurethane?
Oh, 6 mil.
Yes, it's
okay.
It's basically visqueen, and
okay.
It's the thickness is 6 mil. You can do anything more than that, 8 mil, 10 mil.
Right. Okay,
but six
yeah.
mil is minimum.
And then you put that what over the subfloor?
Well, what you would do is you would want to get that to the ground side. So
you go under.
Yeah, what people do is if it's sealed up, they'll put their visqueen down on the ground and then take some gravel or some sand and pour it over the top to hold it in place. And then
wait, what's visqueen?
Oh, visqueen. I'm sorry. The 6 mil polyurethane rolls of plastic.
Polyethylene.
I'm sorry, polyethylene. Thank you, John.
Is sometimes referred to as visqueen.
Yeah,
right.
Visqueen is kind of a Jell-O word.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, I think it's a brand name.
Yes.
Okay, so you put that down on the ground on gravel or
if your room. Is your room underneath your house is open to the weather, and you want to seal up the ground moisture from coming into the house, what you would typically do is put your vapor barrier either on the ground. On the ground is a good place to do that, and then you put a little bit of gravel or sand on top of that to hold it in place.
Oh.
Do you have room to crawl underneath your
yes.
floors? Well, you know, you could put the vapor barrier right on the bottom of the floor joists if you do a good job of sealing it up. That's another possibility.
Okay. Okay, so you either put it right down
Does
on
that,
the ground
that makes sense to you,
mm-hmm. and then hold it down with sand or gravel, mm-hmm. or you place it up under the subflooring.
We need a picture.
Do you
have? I'm going to ask John here if he's got any websites in mind with a picture of this for you to see.
I don't have one, but putting it on the soil
uh-huh.
is the best because
okay.
that is then keeping that whole area
okay.
dry.
If okay.
you do put it on the bottom of the joists themselves, there may be some areas below that where we can still end up with some fungal growth. And the other thing is, this is a cottage, not a home. Now, Ken would never tell you to do this in a home because mm-hmm. a home has so much humidity
uh-huh.
that you could get condensation in there.
Uh-huh.
So putting it down right on the ground, I think, would be good. And just what sort of walls do you have around the side of the cottage, Marianne? Are they poured concrete walls?
Down in the ground, yes.
Yes, great. Okay. Yeah. So then just get a caulk and just caulk the edges. Stick the 6 mil polyethylene against that caulk. Be nice and sealed. And that way you don't have to even get sand or gravel down there to hold it into place because the caulk will hold it into place.
Okay.
And if the cottage is big enough where you have to overlap the sheets, overlap them by a foot.
Okay.
And put a bead of caulk in between and squeeze it together. So basically what you're going to do is you're going to have a complete water/vapor barrier stopping all the soil radon or anything else,
okay.
Soil moisture or radon coming up into your cottage.
Yes. Yes. Oh, thank you. Actually, that's the stuff that my son used to build a little, well, a fairly large pond in Milwaukee here for goldfish and frogs and things.
he may have. Not the ideal pond liner, but thick
it
enough
works.
It will work.
Yeah,
yeah,
it
thick
works.
Enough, it certainly holds water.
Oh, I have great faith in it. Well, thank you so much.
All right, Marianne. Thank you very much for the call. And we'll take more of your calls after a check of the news. In a minute or so, regarding the topic of tankless water heaters from your show in May, we had an email from Jim to say that most manufacturers of tankless water heaters will not warrant the heaters in homes with hard water due to scaling problems. Are you aware of that, John?
Go ahead.
Oh. Well, we always tell people that they have to have water softeners,
right,
and they have to check to see what allowances are the water heater manufacturer has for the hardness of the water. But, right, otherwise, if you tankless are even worse than tank water heaters if you have really hard water.
All right. We'll talk more about this as we continue talking about home renovation, repair, water, and inspection issues with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction and John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Packard on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us today. We're talking about home renovation, repair, water, and inspection issues. The phones are full now, but the number is 1-800-642-1234. And, of course, our email address is talk@wpr.org. Ken and John, again, thanks very much for spending time with us in your busy day. We had an email from Karen from Baraboo. What is worse for a roof, sun or shade? For example, will direct sunlight cause more damage over time, or will the shade, which will not let the roof fully dry out much of the time? What do you think?
These are very good questions. I guess the answer is both. If you get a lot of direct sunlight, the shingles are made to handle lots of sunlight for a long period of time. A good quality shingle should last, the code reads that you can't put a shingle that should last less than 25 years, which is pretty darn good in any weather condition.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest problem with shade is moisture that doesn't wick away. So, and a lot of that has to do with, how shady the spot is. If it's shady and on a northern exposure in a very heavily wooded area, that's going to tend to be hard on the shingles. Molds can grow, moss, all kinds of fun stuff. And
so full sun would be better than full shade.
Boy, I'm not gonna say that. I'm just gonna say that they're both bad for the roof. But I mean, I think shingles do a pretty darn good job. You could buy a shingle that's for a very small amount of money will is guaranteed to last for 40 years. I think that's a pretty good product.
All right. Let's go to Frank in Windsor, who has a shingle problem. Hi, Frank.
Hi. I put up a garage about 13 years ago. I mean, I roofed it in the fall, so it's just coming up on 13 years. And my shingles on the west side are just looking really bad. They're curled, and, areas between are getting really wide without any gravel on them anymore, and the east side looks pretty good yet.
Yep.
So I had heard you talking with someone, I believe it was a certain teed shingle that was a problem. Is that correct?
Well, as I think I mentioned quite early in the program, Frank, not just certain teed, but also Elk, GAF, Globe especially. Many companies have had a problem at one point with their shingles. Do you recall what shingle you put on back there 13 years ago?
I just found the receipt. It is CertainTeed.
It is a CertainTeed. Well, then I think you need to go to that website and check. Most of the shingles that failed with CertainTeed were the shangle shingles, which were sort of a heavy-duty type shingle, which I think is why they use the organic mats instead of the fiberglass. But go to that website. Maybe Ken can or Jim can read that for us again and check. I don't know why it would be the west rather than the east. It might just have something to do with a little bit of sunlight or a little bit of shade. But if it is a CertainTeed product should certainly last at least 25 years.
Well, that's not entirely true. The old shingles, it was okay to have a 15-year shingle. So, do you know what your warranty is on that shingle?
Well, I'm just reading the receipt, and he's written down 15 square CertainTeed sealed on 25 timber blend.
The timber blends. Yeah, John's right then. If they were 15-year warranties, I'd say that you're probably getting a lot of westerly wind, rain and wind exposure, a lot of storms, and that will that'll deteriorate a shingle faster. But if you've got a 25-year warranted shingle, John's absolutely right on. You should contact the website and see if you got some recompense.
And that website is CertainTeed, CertainTeed, shinglesettlement.com.
Okay.
All right. Good luck to you, Frank. Thanks very much for the call. And Peter's next in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Hello, Peter.
Hello. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking my call.
Yep. Go ahead.
Okay. I have a question about basement leaking issue. My in-laws had bought a house this last winter. When the frost went out there, we didn't get any leakage in the basement. It is a poured basement. And now when we get a good solid rain, we're getting a good amount of water on the inside of the basement there. We had a contractor come out and look, because I had located a crack on the backside of the house where the water is coming in at, and they took a garden hose, kind of flooded that area, never got any water. But now it just rained again here a few days ago, and there's water in the basement again. I guess one question would be, is there a way that we can possibly track that down? And what would be the best way to fix it?
A couple of quick questions for you, Peter. First, how old is this house?
The house was built, I think, in 1958.
Okay, 1958. And is the water coming in low on the wall or in the joint between the wall and the floor?
It appears to me like it's, I didn't get to see the water when it was coming in, only after it was coming in. Mm-hmm. And there is some staining along the bottom of the wall where it joins the floor.
Okay.
You know, where the foundation's there, or where the wall sits on the floor.
And one final question, Peter. If you rubbed your hand along, say, the bottom foot of the wall, would there be some sort of some white powder, like a talcum powder along there that might come off on your fingers?
Yeah, there does seem to be some deposit down
okay.
there.
Okay.
And it looks like almost like a possibility of mold creeping up, like a black discoloration in the concrete
sure.
along the floor where it meets the floor along the wall. Where
yeah,
the
that's
also.
Probably fungal growth that's growing on dirt on the wall, which you can wash off really easily with Dawn dish soap and be a good idea. What you've got going there, Peter, is you've got hydrostatic head pressure. Basically, okay. you're in a neighborhood where the groundwater level is coming up above the footing, and that is therefore coming in. Now, you can take care of that. The easy way is to put an interior drain tile system in, and these are really surprisingly inexpensive, considering that they've got to cut out the first 18 inches of concrete all the way around, put in drain tile, wash gravel, and a sump pit. And that will capture the water. It'll break up the hydrostatic pressure. And you can put, there are various kinds of products you can put where the wall meets the floor. So if any water did come through that big crack you tried to get flood, it would go down into the drain tile. So I would talk to a contractor about that, and that will at least capture all of the water and keep it relatively dry. You're still going to get a little bit of efflorescence. It's still going to be a little bit damp, but it's probably going to take care of 90%+ of your issues.
Okay. The other question would be, on the disclosure statement, they said that the water heater leaked, and that's why there was, because it's a finished basement and there's paneling down there.
Yes.
They said that the water stain on the paneling was from the water heater leaking or something at some point, but it looks like it's a lot more than that. Even though it is a finished basement, is that going to be the best route to go?
Yes, definitely with a finished basement.
Okay.
You really need to intercept that water, and where you've
yep.
got wet paneling, that paneling needs to be removed. You need to check for fungal growth. Was the home inspected before they purchased it?
Yes, it was inspected by a home inspector.
Okay. You may want to go over his report and call him back and ask for his advice as well. You know, there's the problem with disclosures is that when I inspect homes, I'm always amazed at what people do not know about their own houses. I think very, very few people lie to you on a disclosure, but they tell a lot of things that are not factual simply because they simply don't know. and the water heater may have overflowed at one point. But talk to your home inspector. That's a good place to start. He's going to be one of the more knowledgeable generalists. And then after that, just look in the yellow pages under basement waterproofing and talk to a couple of those contractors. You'll find the prices. The changing out things like the paneling and cleaning up is probably going to be significantly more expensive than putting in the water collection system. But at least for that water collection system, you're still going to have humidity issues, but you shouldn't have water problems if it's well designed.
Okie doke. Thank you.
All right, Peter. Thanks very much for the call. And if you'd like to join in, the number for you is 1-800-642-1234. As we talk with Ken Adams and John Freiberger, Coral is up next in Madison. Hello. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question about a metal roof. It's on a side room of my house. It's just one story. It's in a historic neighborhood, our house is. And it's a tin roof, I've been told. And I guess I'm wondering, we have painted it several times, and is that the best treatment for a tin roof?
Yes. Basically, it is tin, so it was galvanized metal, same thing as a tin can, and the galvanizing was to keep it from rusting. And the seams are probably lead, low-temperature soldered lead. And keeping it well painted does make a lot of sense.
All right.
Okay.
Is there a special paint that's...
I would just talk to your local hardware store. You're probably going to be looking at some sort of metal. You're probably going to have to prep the roof very carefully. Make sure you hire a good painter, somebody who knows a little bit about historic structures. You don't want them clomping around on it because those old lead joints are a little bit fragile at this point. But go ahead and maintain it. And remember, if you are in a historic neighborhood, if you do need to replace it eventually, you can get the state tax credit where the state is going to pay for 25% of the replacement of that roof as long as it's done to the standards of the Department of Interior.
All right. It has a wooden railing around it that we replaced at one point, but it's rotting away once again. And I just wonder, I think it accumulates a lot of snow.
Yes. Well, the railing needs to, we need to be sure that that railing is made of good quality cedar. And there are a lot of good companies in Madison who could rebuild that railing for you. They will prime and back prime everything, use good glues on it. I mean, there's no reason you shouldn't get 20, 30, even 40 years out of a well-constructed replacement railing. And if you are going to put money into that, if you are going to spend $10,000 on this house in the next 5 years, go to State Historic Society of Wisconsin website and click on Homeowner Tax Credit. And you know, let's say you're going to have to replace the furnace or the water heater in a few years. You actually have 5 years to spend that much money, and the state will give you a bottom-line income tax credit for 25% of the money you spend on qualified work on your house.
That was Homeowner...
Go to State Historic Society of Wisconsin, and then it's either Historic Tax Credit or Homeowner Historic Tax Credit. They have a very nice website. They are very consumer-friendly.
All right.
All right, Coral. Good luck to you. Thanks very much. Appreciate hearing from you. Let's give Dan a chance in Partyville. Hello, Dan.
Good afternoon. I have two quick questions. I don't know who the first one's aimed at. I need the recipe to remortar my stone basement.
I think that would be a good one for John.
That's John.
He's the chef.
Yeah. Be happy to email that to you, Dan, at frei@chorus.net. But the short answer is you want to have you have stone, Partyville. It's probably a fairly, what you'd probably call sandstone, though actually it's a type of limestone, so it's a soft stone.
Yeah.
So you don't want this hard gray Portland cement that, you know, that you could buy in the bags and in the premix. You're going to want to use probably a two parts lime to one part Portland cement. I usually use a white Portland cement bonder, and I can send you all the information on that. One thing to remember is that when you're tuck pointing old stone basements is that you need to make sure that things are moist. If the stone is very, very dry, it sucks the moisture out of the mortar and it doesn't set terribly well. And make sure you know what you're doing. There are some courses available in this. But, you know, test in areas that are not visible to people. If it's just sort of cleaning up the interior, that's a good thing to do to yourself. If you're getting on the exterior where it's really visible, you may want to talk to a restoration mason to make sure it really looks nice.
No, it's just in the basement. I've got sand and lizards coming in.
Sand and lizards. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, are they lizards or are they...
No, they're little salamanders.
Salamanders. Well, good. Well, we do like to have a home for the salamanders. I really miss the one that used to live in my basement.
And the other question, Dan?
The other question is, I have an old chicken coop out in the backyard that I use to store my wife's lawn decorations. One more windstorm is probably going to fall down. I'd like to build a new one, but that's out of my realm of expertise. I've looked up building your own. I've Googled it, and nothing there seems simple enough for me. Do you have any websites that would walk me through building a small storage shed?
There's a whole
should be. You should have very good, very easy access to all kinds of shed plans on the web. The big box stores usually have they'll draw them up for you right there.
You can often buy the pre-cuts. Mm-hmm. That the shed is all you have to. You put it in the truck, take it home, and nail it up.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is to check with your local Amish builders. Many of them make them, and they basically bring them on a truck and put them in your backyard. So lots and lots. Also check some of the lines of books. Just stop at your local bookstore. You know, Sunset Books, I think, has got a book for just about everything.
Public library. Check the public library.
Yeah, tons and tons of resources out there.
Okay, my website was frei@chorus.net.
That's just my email.
Okay,
and I have these things all written up and be happy just to send it to you.
All right, Dan, thanks very much, and good luck to you. Let's go to Chuck next in Sauk City. Chuck, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. A 1940s house. I know the previous owner had vinyl siding put over the cedar siding. They didn't tear the cedar siding off. And in replacing some windows, I know that there's a layer of that brick type. The only thing I can call it brick type. Asphalt shingle between the house and the wood siding.
Mm-hmm.
Now they covered over that. So what kind of problems am I going to have in the future here with rotting? And I think she covered it over. She covered over with the vinyl because the paint was always peeling off of the wood.
Mm-hmm. So we have vinyl siding that's over cedar siding that's over asphalt siding.
Well, you know, that asphalt brick that they used to put on.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know.
Grew up in a house like that.
Yeah.
And that's underneath the whole house?
That
was the original siding?
Yeah.
So I wonder when they put on the cedar, because that's something that would have a lot of done in the 40s, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Are you seeing any kind of problems with the...
No, not yet, but, you know, I'm just kind of wondering how the moisture is going to affect the... The wood siding being trapped in between the vinyl and the asphalt.
Yeah, the wood siding doesn't worry me as much as what's being trapped mm-hmm. behind that old asphalt siding. I have no idea what the perm rating is on that. I'd have to do some research. I'm a little bit concerned that might be acting as an exterior vapor barrier, and that the real area that I'd be worried about decay would actually be in the studs of the house and the exterior sheathing. I think you may have to do a little bit of destructive investigation there, Chuck, to sort of see what's going on. You're getting into something that is a little bit unusual. I have never seen that asphalt brick siding used as an original siding. I've always seen it put over an earlier siding.
Yeah, not in the 40s either. I mean,
it's possible, Chuck, but this house is a little bit older than you think.
Have you ever had an energy audit on your house, Chuck?
No, I'm afraid to.
That may be a good place to start, because other than finding hot spots and cold spots, it might find places, not always, but sometimes it'll find a place if there's moisture buildup or areas that you might want to...
Yeah, it's been added on to over the years, you know, and I know when I rewired the place, and there's like all that old blanket of 2-inch insulation in the walls and stuff, and some of it's lath and plaster, and some of it's, you know, And I know it's not very well insulated.
Yeah, and if it's lath and plaster, it's certainly much older than 1940s. There's no one who was using lath and plaster in the 40s.
Sounds like the old Johnny Cash song, I build it one piece at a time.
That's what I'm running into,
I think energy audit is a good idea, especially if you do it in the winter. If there is condensation inside the walls, that is going to show up as transmitting moisture out quicker. So that would be that would probably be a real good place to start. The second place to get a little help on is, again, check, see if you've got a real knowledgeable home inspector up in that area, somebody who sort of knows old houses, who can perhaps take a look and try to figure out how some of the assemblies are put together and what type of issues you may have. Home inspectors are the guys who've done, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 houses are pretty good at looking at the interior and looking at paint and things and having a pretty good idea how the house is reacting to moisture and humidity.
Good luck to you, Chuck. Thanks very much for the call. Had an email from Andy, who's in the process of finalizing the details for a new home, wondering if it's worth my while to add an air exchanger to the climate-controlled equipment, trying to apply as many energy-efficient applications to the build that I believe are cost-efficient and effective, seeing that the house will be built near two rivers. Will Lake Michigan add any additional concerns I may need to take into consideration?
I say definitely go ahead with the air-to-air heat exchanger. If you're going to build it well insulated, you want to be able to have control over the quality of your air.
Other than that, just make sure that the house is really tight and is well designed. If you're near Lake Michigan, you can get some really interesting wind loads. But heat recovery vent systems are wonderful things to have, really help you with your indoor air quality.
And let's see if we can get Dennis's question in Green Bay answered. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. We have an existing cabin that's on a 4-inch concrete slab. We're going to be adding to it. Any recommendations on the slab we're going to put the addition on as far as thickness, insulation underneath? Just any recommendations?
Well, you're going to have to follow the code on that as far as insulation, and the code, the new uniform dwelling code in Wisconsin is really, really good. The worst house you can now build in Wisconsin is an Energy Star home. So as long as your builder follows code and as long as he does a good job of attaching these two slabs so that we don't get differential movement, just by following the code, you're going to have a good product.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much. And Jason in Illinois asks, what is more efficient, solar-powered attic fans or ridge vents?
Well, a ridge vent, if you have the proper eave end vents, give you great ventilation if you've got enough of ventilation top and bottom because it's all passive. A solar vent's going to cost you more money. They're great. They'll do the job, but you really have to make sure you have adequate ventilation at the eaves at the low end for it to work.
Absolutely right.
All right.
Okay.
And good luck to you, Jason. And I'm sorry we can't get to more calls, but we have run out of time. We're talking with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, specializes in residential renovation projects. John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg consults for historic restoration projects, water and mold litigation, and is a Wisconsin registered home inspector. Ken's website is Adams of Madison. com.
That'll work.
And John's email address is frei@chorus.net. And the website for the CertainTeed Corporation is CertainTeedShingleSettlement.com or 888-898-4111. Our thanks to Rachel Owens for on-air production today. Coming up tomorrow, Milwaukee garden writer and TV host Melinda Myers on Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.